Congress is capping the pensions of top military officials in 2015. As part of the National Defense Authorization Act, pensions for generals and admirals will be trimmed to ensure they make no more in retirement than they did on active duty. That reverses a 2007 law designed to help retain officers during wartime. Well, what effects, if any, will this have on the military's ability to retain its senior officers? Larry Korb is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. He joins me now with a look at this measure. Dr. Korb, great to have you on again.
It's nice to be with you again.
All right, so this decision does reverse a 2007 pension increase. Do we know what effect that policy had on retention or what it takes to retain officers?
As far as I can see, I never saw any data that said that 3- and 4-star generals were getting out to begin with. So I don't think it's Senate Armed Services Committee doesn't think it had any effect on keeping them in. Remember that there was another change a couple of years even before that. It used to be in the military, no matter how long you served, you could only get 75% of your base pay. They allowed that to go up to 100, and then of course they allow people to get what they would have gotten if you did not have these caps on high-level people in government, and whether civilian or military.
I mean, if you're at the 3- or 4-star level and there's a war going on like this, or there had been in Iraq and Afghanistan or whatever, don't you want to try to stay as long as you can because of the glory and maybe that last star that might accrue?
Well, I think you would, and I think it's because this is what you spent your whole life training for, and when your country's at war, you'd want to do that. But remember, not all of the 3- and 4-star generals are in the Army and the Marine Corps out on the battlefield. For example, admirals are deploying all of the time, with their ships, whether you're in war or peace, and you have a lot of people in headquarters jobs too.
All right. And so what do we know about historically? How did this work? I mean, the whole pay and benefit system was utterly different, I guess, in the Vietnam era, in World War II era. Is there anything from that period to learn from here?
Well, remember that when we went to a volunteer force, we made pay competitive to the private sector. In World War II, Vietnam, Korea, you still had a draft, and, their pay was comparatively low. But once you went to a volunteer military, the pay of new enlistees went up, and then, of course, they raised the pay of everybody else to keep the pay differential. The key thing about this is everybody knows, as to use what Secretary Gates said, that, all of these compensation costs are eating us alive. We're going to have to do something about it, because during these wars, it wasn't just the base pay. For example, the housing allowance is supposed to cover 75% of your costs. That's gone up to 100. They're trying to trim that back a little bit this year. They never raised the pay for what you had to pay for health care costs for retirees. They didn't raise that for 13 years. And so the government used to pay 75%. Now it's like 92%. So you had a whole bunch of things that we're going to have to come to grips with. And we have a commission that's going to report in February about what to do. And remember with this, they're grandfathering it, so nobody who may have made a decision to stay in is going to be affected.
So in your opinion, people that are not yet grandfathered, do you think this will have any effect on their decisions they make individually to stay with the military?
I doubt it, because as the Senate Armed Services Committee said, there wasn't any indication that, it had increased, officer retention, even with this, added benefit.
And also, I mean, do we have any statistics on the percentage of senior officers at that level who, when they do muster out, go to really nice private sector jobs? I mean, we know the think tanks, we know the consulting firms here in Washington that are willing to hire them at great salaries.
Oh, yeah.
But do they all do that?
Oh, I've just about all of them do. Occasionally you see somebody doesn't. But, you know, they get a lot of them get on the boards. If you take a look at the boards of the defense companies, you'll see a lot of, retired 3- and 4-star generals there. And normally what has to happen is if you don't get promoted, to the 3- or 4-star, people have to get out. And remember, you only... 3- and 4-star goes with the job, but up to that you get promoted by a promotion board. But if you're a 2-star general or a 2-star admiral, and they give you a job like the head of the central command, then you get the extra star. So when you see people get in trouble, occasionally we have these generals get in trouble, you go back to your highest rank that you got when you were just being promoted by a board.
And just out of curiosity, this is a little bit off the topic, but while we have you, I mean, there was a general officer, I believe a 2-star, that was drummed out of the Air Force for the improper behavior of the Nuclear Missile Command last year, or I guess earlier this year. What is the track record of someone like that, who really had a very fine career up until those last months? What's their prospects for post-military employment?
Well, they're certainly not as good as someone, who doesn't have that record. You know, people will be much more careful, I think, of putting them on the board. But they can, can start their own, consulting firm, for example, or they can actually, if you will, get a regular job. Remember that military people, retire, even if you serve 40 years, you're still 60 years old, and lots of folks are working until they're 70 these days.
And those board positions, that sounds like a great deal, because at the level of major defense contractor, those board positions pay what a lot of people would consider to be a good salary for actually working.
Well, that's right. I mean, someone can pay like $80,000. And, the real issue here is we're going to have to do something about military total compensation. And remember that what happened, and we did it when I was there. The Pentagon does, it's not in the Pentagon budget paying military retirees. Basically, the way it works, you have an accrual system, and they tell you how much you have to put aside. But last year, we spent $52 billion on military retirement. That was paid by the Treasury. The Pentagon only took a hit for like $14 or $15 billion based on the accrual system.
All right, so we have this, by the way, we're speaking with Larry Korb. He's a senior fellow with the Center for American Progress, and also former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, and a whole lot of other jobs in between. And looking at the NDAA for 2015, the issues we've talked about, the costs that are eating the military alive, and some of the military issues themselves, the direct military problems, don't seem to be addressed very fully by this bill. What's your take on the 2015 NDAA?
Well, what happened was they wanted to increase the copays that you pay at the pharmacy, and it went up just a couple of dollars a month. And, the Pentagon wanted it to go up much more. And they also wanted to cut the housing allowance from basically paying 100 down to 95. It was only cut from 100 to 99. What happens is the veterans lobby, particularly led by groups like the Military Officers Association, I mean, they just, you make any suggestion to change the pay, they put tremendous pressure on. And since you have so few people in the Congress now who served in the military, they don't understand military compensation. They don't want to fight, for these lobbies. Last year, Patty Murray, Senator from Washington, the head of the Senate Budget Committee, and Paul Ryan, the head of the House Budget Committee, wanted to say for retirees under 62, instead of getting the full cost of living allowance, you would get COLA minus one, then it would be recomputed at 62. Well, you should have seen they stormed the Hill, and the Congress, backed off, which is amazing given, who Paul Ryan is. I mean, he, ran for vice president of the Republicans, and he's their budget guru.
Yeah, and so, but what about the fact, I mean, I'm just curious, because you have Carl Levin on the Senate side retiring after all these years, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee there, and Buck McKeon retiring from the health side. From the House side. So it seems like they could have resisted this. Sounds like the military has its own AARP.
Well, it's interesting. Levin, you know, basically said that he really is frustrated that he wasn't able to get the things that the Pentagon wanted to increase the co-pays for pharmacy and for, you know, cutting the housing allowance. He wished it was more. The great paradox is going to be with John McCain taking over, given his military service, if he says, hey, wait a second, I think we can do this, it will have much more impact than, you know, other folks, you know, given that he's a genuine hero, comes from a long line of military generals and admirals.
And just looking at the general spending, aside from pay and benefits, this NDAA doesn't seem to really advance the military toward this more expeditionary, lighter type of future that they've been talking about.
Well, really, everybody talks about sequester and the amount of money that they have. And sequester has, in real terms, reduced us back to where we were in 2007. The key issue is they got to get the whole of compensation, and then the other thing that they have to do is get the cost growth in the weapon systems, which is really way off the board. And again, McCain's been a leader on that, so hopefully they'll do something about that. And then, yeah, we really have to figure, you know, what type of military do we need? Are we going to go to drones and, you know, have less manned aircraft? So should we, you know, focus more on that? Do we still need, you know, 11 aircraft carriers, given the fact that we've got cruise missiles on destroyers? Then the other big issue they're going to have to face is that they're going to modernize all three legs of the nuclear triad, the submarine launch, ballistic missiles, the land-based, and the bombers, because, as the Congressional Budget Office said, you're going to have to spend over the next 10 years on that $350 billion.
Well, there's always 2016, I guess, to start getting after those issues. Lawrence Korb is a senior fellow with Center for American Progress. Larry, as always, thanks for joining me.
Okay, thanks for having me.